the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, a bumper match day 12 played over the weekend. We had the ACL clubs back in league action. And judging from their results, it's as if they'd never been away. But I guess my question off the top for you this week is, are we starting to see something special brewing down in Hiroshima?
Oh, we definitely seem to be. I mean, it's been coming for a while. They've been playing very well, but this is the statement victory this weekend to put three against Kashima, who barely conceded goals before this round. And yeah, I've just been looking phenomenal at the top of the table. They put in a great performance. I mean, Makoto Mitsuda, I mean, if he continues like this, we might not see him in the J-League for much longer.
Yeah, absolutely superb. And yeah, listeners, you might remember back in match day six, just six rounds ago, Hiroshima were playing a battle of the bottom away at Shonan, when those two were literally the bottom two in the table. And starting from that victory away at the Lemon Gas Stadium, Hiroshima have claimed victories in four of their last seven games. And yes, they're well and truly sitting pretty up in the top half of the table now, seventh after 12 match days. So yes, we do have the four ACL clubs to cover on their return to league action, but we will begin down at the Edion Stadium, where Hiroshima, well, basically the only bump in the road they've had since that that win that kickstarted their rise up the table at Shonan was last Wednesday night when they lost at home to Kashiwa, Sam. But yes, they more than bounced back in style when they, well, they, is it safe to say they stunned the league leaders, Kashima Antlers 3-0 at the Edion?
Well, they very much did, and more credit has to go to Michael Skibber. I mean, and he's been playing the usual formation of the 3-6-1 that Hiroshima have played forever. But in this game, he changes it. He goes to four at the back. Nagami was the one dropped, and they played Fuji and Kashiwa as very advanced fullbacks, wingbacks. It was kind of like they'd played Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, the way that they were getting forward. And they were just so relentless. They got through a slight period, maybe the first 10 minutes, where Kashima were the better side, and maybe Hiroshima were just getting used to the way they were playing. But once they clicked into gear, they were absolutely fantastic. Junior Santos, we've kind of gone on a bit about him throughout the last few weeks. He's like, they need a better striker up there. But he was still like, not everything necessarily came off for him, but everything kind of bounced correctly off him, if you know what I mean. Everything, he was holding the ball up, and it would eventually fall its way to a Mitsuda or a Morishima or the two fullbacks. And just they were relentless in building off that. And some of the goals they scored were terrific, and they were getting at this Kashima team. Although before the season, we thought, okay, there were a few defensive frailties there, but Misawa stepped in and really solidified that. But Sanfrecce took full advantage of whatever holes were there. And yeah, from probably, say, the 20th, 25th minute onwards, they absolutely blew Kashima away.
Yeah, and you mentioned Junior Santos there. I think we've come to realise this far into the season that, yeah, Hiroshima can't really rely on him too much for goals. But as you say, yeah, things just seem to go right for him on this occasion. And he was involved in all three of the Hiroshima goals on the afternoon. You mentioned, yeah, Antlers were slightly the better team early doors, and Yuta Matsumura had an early chance, although he was denied by a superb sliding block by Tsukasa Shiotani. But then, yeah, from about the half hour on, it was all the chances seemed to fall for Hiroshima. And yes, the man of the moment, Makoto Mitsuda, almost got the opener for the hosts in the 34th minute, but he was denied by a low save by Kwonsun Tay. But then 4 minutes later in the 38th minute, the host did indeed take the lead when they took the ball from back to front. Junior Santos drove forward, was dispossessed, but it broke for Mitsuda, whose first time pass slid in the veteran Yoshifumi Kashiwa, who stroked home a composed finish past Kwonsun Tay. 10 minutes after the restart, Nassim Ben Khalifa glanced a header from Kashiwa's cross just wide, and then just past the hour, that man Junior Santos was involved again. But from there, he held the ball up and allowed Mitsuta to burst through the centre. And then, yeah, from there, it's another super special goal from this young sensation. From inside the D, Mitsuta fired through Koki Anzai's legs and in off the hand of Kwon for 2-0. And then, yeah, 10 minutes from time, Tell you what, anybody who has a Yoshifumi Kashiwa in their fantasy team is absolutely loving life this week, aren't they, Sam? Because he got his second of the game, in the 79th minute, firing high into the net past Kwon after the keeper had saved Junior Santos's first time shot. So you mentioned Michael Skibber, and basically, yeah, the turnaround has come since he entered the country and, actually was able to get his fingerprints properly on this squad. And it's such an interesting mix, isn't it, Sam? Because there's some players left from the team that was so successful in the middle of the past decade. Shaw Sasaki, Shiotani's returned to the team, as has Gakuto Notsudo, who's bounced around on loan in the lower divisions over the past few seasons. But then, yeah, you've got the likes of Makoto Mitsuta and obviously Tsukasa Morishima, who's more experienced now, but part of the younger brigade. And it's all adding up to a really interesting mixture at the moment.
Yeah, it really is. And Michael Skibber has had to work with what he's got. It's not like there's a lot of money around Hiroshima that they can bring in whoever he wants. He was dealt this hand, which is a team that, as you say, is a lot of veteran players that have kind of got stale over the last few years, and Hiroshima have just been middling and getting maybe progressively worse each season. But he's coming in, he's absolutely revitalised this team. It is the injection of youth. Mitsuto has been a revelation. Morishima, I think, for a few years has been probably their best player, especially since Kawabe left. But then you've got Fuji out on the right wing back. I think he's been absolutely magnificent. And he's then extracting things out of those veteran players. Like Yoshifumi Kashiwa, you could argue a couple of years ago, it was like his career was winding down. He wasn't really getting too many starts, but he has been revitalized under this system. And it's just that energy that the whole pressing mantra gives. It's getting the results. They could see it even in those first couple of games where they lost to Tokyo, they lost to Kawasaki, but you could see the seeds were there and they've all bought into it. And they've all, just been absolutely revitalized by the system, by the fresh approach, which is something Hiroshima have desperately needed. And it's bringing out results. And finally, I can say I'm enjoying the Sanfrecce Hiroshima team.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And it's an absolute mouthwatering clash next on their slate. On Friday Night Football, they head to Saitama Stadium to visit Urawa Reds. And Reds obviously in need of a boost, in need of a kickstart in the league this season. And they could get that if they can take down the in-form Sanfrecce team. But purple band of warriors will head up to Saitama with no fear, I'm sure. And it should be an absolute cracker to kickstart the match day 13 schedule. Obviously, this is a frustrating loss for Kashima, Sam. They would have headed down to Hiroshima expecting to be able to maybe even build on their 5-point advantage at the top of the table or at the very least maintain it. After that bright start, slightly better than Hiroshima start, if you like, things didn't really seem to go for them at all, did it? So just a bad day at the office for you, or what went wrong on the Saturday afternoon for Kashima Antlers?
Well, they'll hope that it was just a bad day at the office. I mean, they've named the same team, I think, that beat Iwata in midweek, and it has been generally the same team throughout the season. They've done okay, but they just didn't deal with it. They were tested a lot more than they have been in recent weeks, especially in those key defensive areas where it's still a very young defence, especially if you look at Sunemoto and Sekigawa. Sunemoto had a terrible first half. He was injured as well. I think he got a really nasty tackle, actually, right at the end of the half, which I don't think it's really been caught by, it wasn't caught really and discussed, at least on the TV, but it was a really poor tackle. But besides that, he'd had a tough outing. Sekikawa as well, who started the season really shakily, had a couple of games out and has come back in and done a lot better, but then he was having a really poor game. And I suppose you're going to get that when you have young defenders in, and it's a really inexperienced backline, especially when you've got a central midfielder as kind of the guy who's having to lead it. So I guess it's maybe a defensive performance that was inevitable at some point, given how they play. They were very attacking, and given the inexperience that they've got there. But Yeah, I just think it was one of those days where they just didn't turn up. I think it'll be an excuse now to bring Diego Pituca back into the starting 11, because obviously he had his bottle-kicking incident, and then they haven't started him since. He's had a couple of appearances off the bench, but I think they will look at this now and think the way that they were carved through, especially in that first, towards the end of that first half, then I think they'll consider we might need a bit more protection and bring him in. So, yeah, it's a slight cause for concern, but I think they'll just see it as just one game where they were absolutely overwhelmed by a team, and not many teams will play in the manner that Hiroshima do. But yeah, I think Rene Weiler will see a few things he might need to tweak here, but yeah, it's not quite panic stations just yet. And they've got, yeah, home tie against Sapporo next week, so let's see, that they'll expect to bounce back in that one.
Yes, indeed. And well, it's their third loss of the season, Sam. The previous two had been to Kawasaki and to Yokohama F. Marinos, and both were similarly convincing scorelines to this on Saturday. So I guess, yeah, if they're off their if they're off their vitamins, then it just doesn't work for them in a particular game. So as you say, yeah, they'll hope to bounce back against Sapporo. But as we'll come on to later, Sapporo's recent run of results suggests that's going to end in a 0-0 draw. So that wouldn't be ideal for Antlers there. But yeah, we'll wait and see. And for Antlers, still sitting at the top of the pile. But yes, as we mentioned, their lead at the top was cut from 5 points back to two. That is because Kawasaki Frontale returned to league action at Nihon Daira. They visited Shimizu S-Pulse after their ACL disappointment, Sam. And, they were able to put it behind them. I guess this is a pretty long bow to draw, but I don't know if you want to make a comparison with Manchester City losing a two-goal lead on aggregate in the 90th minute and stoppage time against Real Madrid, and then going out of the European Champions League in extra time of the semi-final, to if you can compare that to going out in the group stage of the Asian Champions League while you're watching JDT and Ulsan play on TV. But at least for Frontale, this was one of their targets for this season, and to fall at the first hurdle, I'm sure must have been a crushing blow to Toru Uniki and his side. But just like Manchester City did on Sunday in front of a watching Cesare Palenghi, I should say, when they swept aside Newcastle United. Frontale returned to league play and took care of business themselves, easing to a 2-0 away win over Shimizu.
Yeah, I can see the comparison. They're definitely similar levels of upset and disappointment that they would have felt compared to Man City. They weren't quite as swashbuckling as Man City in their response, but they got the job done. And I think that was kind of the mantra for all the ACL teams coming into this weekend, given the grueling schedule they've had and the flight and all that sort of thing. They just had to get through this game, and they did. I thought first half they played quite well. Some of the build-up play was very nice, interchanging between in the area. Damian was just bounced, everything was played into him, and it was worked around, and Wakizaka obviously got his goal, and yeah, it was all nicely worked, and Shimizu offered very little of a threat, especially in the second half, where Kawasaki could just kind of sit back and hold that lead and be fairly comfortable. So they'll be delighted with the way that this has gone. It gets them back on course, and yeah, Kashima's loss as well, it makes it a 2-point gap, Kawasaki with the game in hand. So yeah, they'll see it as, oh, we'll go top with that game in hand, and everything will be back to normal in the league. So yeah, a kind of perfect way to ease themselves back in. I thought Shimizu, there was maybe an opportunity for them in this home game against a Frontale team, or maybe a fragile Frontale team, but really they never got to grips with the game.
Yes, indeed. And you mentioned Wakizaka there. I tell you what, I could have used some of this earlier on in the season, Sam, because he was one of my big differentials at the start of the J-League fantasy season. But yeah, it just never went for him at all in the early going before they headed off to the ACL. That was him out of my team. And yes, they returned to league action, and he opened the scoring in the 14th minute and then set up the second for Marcinho in the 32nd. So yeah, definitely a good day out for Yasutaro Wakizaka and indeed his J-League fantasy owners. And basically aside from a rocket from 25 yards from Thiago Santana that cannoned into the post 4 minutes before half time, there was very little that Shimizu offered in this game. Yeah, it was, I guess, a very, very late chance for Osei Hun but he headed wide in stoppage time, and the game was well and truly up by that point anyway. So, Frontale returned to Kanagawa with the 3 points, and as we said, their deficit to Kashima was cut back to 2 points, and indeed they have a game in hand. Yokohama F. Marinos were also victorious on their return to J1 action on Saturday, Sam. This was slightly controversy-tinged, though, as we'll get to in a moment. But, for Nagoya, they've been one of our whipping boys, one of our whipping teams, if you like, in the early going this season. But to me, from the highlights, they looked much improved in this game. And as we'll come on to, as I said, they were pretty unlucky, I think we will ultimately agree on. And they took a 24th-minute lead when Shinosuke Nakatani glanced in a header from Mateus's corner.
I think they were unlucky in this game. I'll agree with you there. I'm not sure how great they were just generally in open play. I mean, everything that was good about Nagoya came from a Mateus set piece, a corner or his delivery in there or a free kick. There was one occasion towards the start of the second half where he put a cross in. But generally speaking, he's playing up front. He's not going to be wide. And without him being wide and crossing the ball in, they don't really create anything. I thought they were better defensively than they have been. They actually did the basics a bit more in this game. But yeah, it was Mateus's balls in were the main threat that they carried. And yeah, it set up a very good goal. The first one, it's a really difficult one for anyone to defend the way that he puts the ball in. Nakatani got ahead of his man and glanced the header in. It was a very fine way to start, and they looked pretty solid throughout the game, Nagoya. But yeah, I just think in open play, I don't think many teams are going to worry too much about what Nagoya are doing, especially in this system, which I think really nullifies Mateus, and he has to work extra hard with his set-piece delivery.
Well, yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, from the highlights, basically, yeah, everything is Mateus's left foot. And if anything else isn't really clicking for them, is it? But, I said Nagoya were unlucky. And as we'll come on to, there was a VAR decision that went against them when they thought they had retaken the lead after Nakatani had given it to them in the first place. I mean, even in F. Marinos's equaliser, Sam, there's some misfortune, isn't there? Because when the ball is played forward by, I think it's Taki Akita, I mean, Elber is in an offside position in the center, but Yuichi Maruyama tries to clear it and slices the ball basically into Elber's path, and he's first to react to it and nods a bouncing ball past Mitch Langerak. So there's no question of an offside here because the ball wasn't played in Elber's direction. So I'm not suggesting that, but just the fact that Maruyama, it was almost as if he was an F. Marinos player. His clearance seemed to sit up perfectly for Elber, who did the rest. And that was just 10 minutes after F. Marinos had gone behind. So they went into the sheds at 1-1, and then they began the second half in decent style, again with Mateus's set pieces to the fore, and again the notoriously unlucky Noriyoshi Sakai was denied by a remarkable flying save from Yohei Takaoka just a minute after the restart. And then 6 minutes into the second half, this is where we need to break out the drop.
This week in VAR.
This week in VAR. This week. So from a, you guessed it, listeners, a wicked Mateus corner in swinger into the box. Haruya Fuji makes a near post run and glances across the face of goal, and it comes off somebody, Sam, it appears, before settling into the net at, fizzed across Takaoka. The Grampus players wheeled away in celebration only for, the dreaded hand to go to the referee's ear, and then he's summoned over for a look. Do you reckon even now, 2 days later, you know who the ball came off?
I think it's Nagato. I'm fairly confident, but I wouldn't bet my house on it or anything. But yeah, I think it's Nagato. And yeah, I'm not sure it makes too much difference to the decision where who it comes off, because the two players that are flagged for offside or given offside eventually were offside even from the initial flick. So it doesn't matter who it then cannons off. They're still going to assess them the same. I'm still like when I watched this live, I thought there's no way this should be ruled out. I think this is such a harsh decision. I'm slightly easing towards the referee's point of view a little bit. I still think it should be given, because it hits Nagato, I assume, and goes in. And I don't think the goalkeeper has got any chance of saving it, whoever's around him. But they've looked at it. There are two players stood in the six-yard box there, deemed to be interfering with him. And to an extent, you can't necessarily argue with that. If someone is stood a couple of yards away from the goalkeeper in a six-yard box, you do think they probably are interfering to a degree. But yeah, it's a harsh one, I think, on them, because I don't see Takeoka saying it at all, whether they're there or not. So, and there were Marinos supporters on Twitter that were feeling that Nagoya had been harshly done to. So I think if you look at that, I think you can tell that, yeah, it's probably a little bit unfair on Nagoya. But I can see why the referee and the team of officials have come to the decision that they did.
Yeah, okay. So Fuji, or whoever's goal it was ultimately disallowed for offside. Those are two Grampus players standing in, in a slightly offside position. But yeah, slightly offside is still offside, isn't it? And so it remained 1-1. It just wasn't Nagoya's day. Just past the hour, Mateus free kick came back off the junction of bar and post. But the hosts, well, they didn't weather a storm, but yes, they rode their luck at times, and they grabbed a late winner with 4 minutes left when Takuma Nishimura's shot was saved by Mitch Langerak low down, and Anderson Lopez was stationed where he loves to be, 6 yards out to tap in the rebound. Harsh result on Nagoya, who were stuck down in 15th, but for F Marinos, a vital 3 points for them as they keep pace with Frontale and Antlers. They're just 2 points behind Frontale, and 4 off the top spot once again, with a game in hand as well, of course. So Anderson Lopez, that's where he lives and breathes, Sam. So I guess we shouldn't be too surprised at another tap in for the big man. It was interesting in to take it all the way back to the start, Sam, that the F Marinos manager Kevin Muscat was able to field his four-headed Brazilian monster, wasn't it, with Anderson Lopez, Leo Ciara, Elber, and Marcos Jr. all starting. And I wager that's got to be for the first time this season that all four started together. So, I mean, it just gives you an idea of the attacking riches, obviously, they've got with Nishimura, who's made such an impressive impact since his arrival in the off-season. Capable of coming off the bench and playing a role in the winner. So, now that they've got players back to fitness and in peak physical condition by the looks of things, I wonder whether F. Marinos are primed for a real strong push at the title this season, as they're looking pretty decent at the moment.
Yeah, they are. They've definitely got all the quality that's needed. There are maybe a few issues defensively that they still need to iron out, and they have to decide on what is the best combination going forward. But they've got so many options, and I don't think this is the strongest league that it's been in the last couple of years. Kawasaki aren't at the level. They're not an uncatchable team as maybe they've seemed in the last few years. So I think Marinos will definitely be there. I think you're right in saying this is the first time that all four had played together. I think it might put an end to our thoughts that Hirohito Nakagawa was anywhere near his 2019 level. He definitely seems to have dropped out of favour now and not been able to recapture that form for any length of time, but still a very good option on the bench. And you think Mizunuma and Miyachi, they all played a part in that ACL run. They all look fairly decent. So there's plenty of very good options that have already had a good number of minutes under their belt this season. So that can only be good for F. Marinos. It's great problems for Kevin Muscat to have. And Takuma Nishimura, I mean, every time he's on the pitch, he seems to make something happen. And if you've got that from your probably regular substitute, I think that's a great thing to have.
Yeah, he's been terrific since his arrival, has well and truly seized his opportunity, and is a key part of the setup now up front for, F. Marinos attacking powerhouse. All right, well, so we mentioned that basically the ACL clubs picked up where they left off before they headed over to Southeast Asia. So that was with Kawasaki and F. Marinos both winning on their return. Well, for Kobe, it was more of the same. Of course, winless this season as they headed over to play in the ACL. They'd lost their last three before they departed. And, well, yeah, they just carried on where they left off and still have no wins and just 4 points from 11 games now after their fourth successive defeat. This was at the hands of Gunma Osaka in a Kansai derby on Sunday afternoon. Sam, Gunma left it late, but yeah, just another installment of the Kobe horror show this season in J1.
Yeah, nothing went for them in this game. Not that they were playing that well anyway, but they then got a red card towards the end of the, well, not towards the end of the first half, and then the two goals that Gunma scored, they come courtesy of big deflection. So yeah, when you're down there, nothing's going to go right for you, and that's what it was for Vissel. But yeah, generally speaking, I thought this was a poor game between two teams lacking in confidence and lacking in quality for a large parts of it, which is absurd to say about Kobe given the players that they had on the pitch. But yeah, they didn't really create too much. I don't think Gunma did either, even with the man advantage for a good hour of this game. So yeah, both teams, I don't think, can come out of this game taking too much positive out of it. But yeah, Gunma, they did enough, I suppose. They got the result in the end. But yeah, they won't be too delighted with the way that they played, because I think before the two goals, it was probably Kobe who had the best chance when Iniesta played in Muto, but he didn't take his opportunity. But other than that, and then before the red card, I thought Kobe, yeah, didn't create too much either. And yeah, and what is it? They're on 4 points now. They found themselves 7 points adrift of safety, which is, again, absurd to say about Vissel Kobe. But that's where they are. And the signs weren't great in this game that Lotina was set to bring about a revival.
Well, yeah, I wondered last week, didn't I, whether if you'd seen anything in the in their ACL performances that suggested, yeah, brighter times might be ahead in J1. And I think, yeah, you pretty swiftly shot down that idea and that they'd done enough to get through in the ACL. But, yeah, didn't seem to have, sparked into life particularly. And, yeah, that was evident again on Sunday at the Panasonic Stadium. You'll notice, listeners, that I didn't play the outro to the VAR jingle because, yeah, we have some more to chat about in relation to VAR in this game and indeed in the next one as well, Kashiwa Urawa. But, yeah, you mentioned it, Sam, the red card, it was for Ryuho Kikuchi. The red card was shown to him 10 minutes before halftime, but, yeah, just past the half hour, he slid in and brought down Patrick inside the D as they raced after Darwin's long header forward. The referee initially waved play on, but after he was encouraged over for a look at the monitor, he changed his decision to a straight red for Dogso. Yes, Kikuchi sent off as Vissel went down to 10 men. So, I mean, he's got a perfect look at it, the referee. It's one of those where I guess, you know, we've wondered from time to time whether the VARs in Japan don't want to kick up a stink in and possibly show up the referee on the field. But I think in this occasion, the correct decision was made, and the referee just had to swallow his pride and admit that, yes, it was a foul from Kikuchi and that the red card was the correct decision.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is where VAR actually works. It looks good because from the referee's angle, he must think, because the ball travels in the same direction as if Kikuchi had got a toe on it. So from where he was, he must have thought Kikuchi gets there. But it's quite clear from the replay, he doesn't get to the ball. He then brings down Patrick. So it was absolutely a clear red card, and they can have no complaints, really. The only complaint I would have is that Kikuchi's defending in the first place was really poor, because when the ball's played over the top, he is in such a good position. He's got the run on Patrick, and then he just doesn't seem to sprint into action. He's a bit dawdling, and then Patrick gets in front of him. He panics with a lunging tackle, and yeah, and he's given his marching orders. And it's just another example this season of the Kikuchi of last year has been left in last year, because I don't know where he is anymore. Maybe Thomas Vermaelen took him over to Belgium with him, because he's been really poor, and this was another example of it.
Indeed. So by that point in the game, Gunma youngster Jiro Nakamura had shot from distance and that had grazed the bar on its way out of play. That was in the 23rd minute, so 10 minutes before Kikuchi was sent off. And then 4 minutes before the break, Kōu Yanagisawa's shot from alongside the penalty spot came back off Daya Maekawa's right-hand post. And then in the second minute of first half stoppage time, a Kwon Kyung Won's 35-yard pile driver almost broke Maekawa's left-hand post. So Gamba had, they got the benefit of the VAR decision, obviously, and obviously that was correct, so no luck involved there. But, yeah, they had been unlucky that they had basically hit the as much woodwork as you can in the first half, but had not been able to score. And then, as you say, Sam, Kobe nearly nicked a goal, well, completely against the run of play on the hour when the substitute Andres Iniesta played in Yoshinori Muto. But thankfully for Gamba and their support, the keeper Jun Uchimori was able to stick out a leg to deny Muto. And then inside the last 10 minutes, yes, the visitors' resistance was finally broken. And I don't know if you'd been keeping track, Sam, but it was literally a calendar month in between league goals for Gamba. Their last goal had come on the 10th of April when Kosuke Onase had equalized in the 7th minute of stoppage time in their game away at Shimizu, I think it was. And then, yeah, they'd gone from basically the 10th of April until the 8th of May without scoring a league goal. And Kwon was the man who got it in the 81st minute when he reacted well to head in after Yanagi Isawa's shot was deflected. And then in the first minute of stoppage time, Wellington Silva put the icing on the cake when he surged into the box from out on the left, and his blast deflected off Leo Osaki and past a helpless Maekawa. So that's Gamba up to 12th. And as we've said, and we said at the intro of this game, Kobe still at rock bottom. And as you mentioned, Sam, 7 points from safety. And, well, there's no point in me even saying if you had that in your J-Pred at the start of the season, because nobody did, because everybody had them in their top four. But, speaking of four, they've got four draws from 11 games, and they'll be lucky to win four games all season. It's just been an absolute horror show. And when will it start to turn around? Well, we don't know. And this has led to, perhaps a bit of a tongue-in-cheek question from Daniel Hawkins, one of our patrons, but we'll wait and see. He wonders, with the Vissel looking like they're heading to J2, Sam, which players should the remaining J1 teams be keeping an eye on to strengthen their squads? Could we see Muto or Iniesta at the best Denki next year?
Why not? Why not? Yeah, I don't know if they've quite got the finances for that, but I'd love to see it. I mean, it's just such a weird situation, isn't it? And you could almost see a case where they go down, but because they're on so much money, like Diego Forlan playing for Cerez Osaka in J2, and you could get a situation where you've got Osaka and Muto turning up against the Blablitz Akito in a great game up there. I think that's how you'd be, because other than that, you've got the stars, obviously you'd want Muto, Osako, Iniesta, or Yamaguchi probably, but the rest of that squad, I'm looking at, am I picking up any of those goalkeepers? No, I don't think so. You'd take Sakai, but on the current form of the rest of the defence, I don't think anyone's looking at those either. So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of below average mess in amongst the superstars here, and I guess that's a key reason why they're doing so poorly.
Yeah, well, you might have your pick of them, Daniel, so plenty of water to go under the bridge yet, and maybe some of the youngsters might impress you before the season's over, but who knows, and when will it start to turn around for Kobe? Well, I can't see it this coming Saturday when they host Tosu, because Tosu have been terrific so far this season, and as we'll come on to shortly, just defeated FC Tokyo on the weekend. And then after Tosu at home, it's the defending champions Kawasaki who rock up to the Neuwirth Stadium. So they might be waiting until match day 14, Sam, when they visit Shonan. But again, Shonan will have that circled on their calendar as a game that they'll be looking to win to boost their survival chances. So, it's unbelievable that it's gotten to this for Kobe. But, a massive understatement to say they have a lot of work to do to turn it around. So, they continued where they left off before they headed over to the ACL, as did Urawa Reds, who had drawn their previous three games at least not as bad as Kobe losing their previous three. But yeah, Reds were on a run of three draws before they headed away, and they returned to league action with, you guessed it, another draw. This was 0-0 away at Kashua Reysol in the late game. Well, the late evening game, the late afternoon game, rather, on Sunday. Yeah, again, I haven't played the VAR outro yet, listeners, because there's a big decision that we have to chat about in this one as well. The best chance of the first half at Hitachi Dai came 3 minutes before the break when Kim Sung-gyu made a point-blank save to keep out Alex Schalk's header from inside the six-yard box as, Reds came closest in the first 45 minutes. Then 12 minutes after the break, Schalk curled in a terrific shot via a slight deflection off a defender, but the goal was disallowed due to, well, from what I could tell, Sam, the slightest of offside decisions, and we weren't helped at home on the highlights package by the DAZN replays. I said initially, perhaps tellingly, not showing the view across the pitch. And, you know, obviously we're accustomed to getting dodgy replays, which we basically are led to believe means that the broadcasting crew are covering up what might be loosely defined as a refereeing or an officiating cock-up. But you were saying in the green room that, having watched the full coverage back, that you think the officiating crew might have actually got this one right. So why didn't we see the correct replay?
Well, that's a great question. I have no idea, because I was like, once they show the replay from a low angle cutting across, it's nowhere near down the line. I think, okay, they're covering up something here, and he must have been just onside. But yeah, it's not really that easy on the live footage either, because Schalke is just going off screen as the ball is played. But it does look, and from those pictures, that he was offside. So yeah, just do yourself a favour, J-League, and just show that you're correct, and we don't have to worry about this. Because yeah, there is that feeling every time that they don't show anything right, it's probably because it was wrong and they're just hiding it. But yeah, when they've got it right, as I'm pretty confident they have here, just show it and let put all our minds at rest.
Indeed, indeed. So Schalk looked decent. Again, only having watched the highlights myself, Sam. Kasper Juncker was involved in the squad, and it was an interesting lineup put out by Ricardo Rodriguez. But Schalk and David Moberger, of course, they both seem to be settling in reasonably well to life at the Saitama Stadium.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen from both of them. I mean, Moberg showed it before the ACL and in fits and starts within that competition. And Schalk looks like, yeah, he's a very good mobile striker. He's got a clever movement in and around the area. He's got a decent shot on him as well. And while Juncker's out, I don't know exactly how long it's going to be. He's had a surgery on a broken finger, so you imagine eventually you're going to play with a cast and it won't be too long before he comes back. But they've got a very able deputy in Schalke, who again has got good minutes in the ACL, which is perfect for him to get up to speed. So yeah, they've got really good options as well. You've got Maxwell coming off the bench as well. I think he looked very good when he came on. And yeah, it's looking, it was a difficult place to go, I suppose, in Kashua. They bounced back quite well in midweek after we thought last week's Sagan Tosu defeat. Okay, is this them just dropping back? But then they beat Hiroshima, which, given this weekend's result, looked like a fantastic performance. Mm. And Reds held their own in this. I don't think it was like the greatest game in the world. I don't think either side really dominated. But yeah, they've got very good players, and I think just, maybe they've got a week's break now. I think maybe we'll see a little bit more of the best of Urawa in the coming weeks.
Yeah, well, they're definitely in need of a spark in league play. So, yeah, hopefully that will come. After that disallowed goal in the 57th minute, I guess chances were at a premium until a little bit of a late flurry towards the end of the game. In the 87th minute, the Kashua midfielder Angelotti fired over from just inside the penalty spot when he might have done better. And then a frankly ridiculous volley. I can't believe he even attempted it from Alex Schalk from all of 20 yards out. Yeah, just whacking a ball falling out of the sky, and it almost turned into a goal of the season contender, but cannoned into the bar and flew out of play in the 96th minute as, yeah, the game ended 0-0. And, well, I guess at the start of the season, Sam, if you said that one of these teams would be fourth and the other would be 14th after match day 12, we probably would have thought, yeah, that sounded fairly reasonable and Reds would be doing okay and Racel would be struggling as we all expected them to. But, yeah, they've, well, obviously Reds supporters aren't particularly happy about it, but, yes, they've flipped their roles. And indeed, it's Racel who are flying high. And as you say, having steadied the ship with that win against Hiroshima in midweek when, yeah, we thought their tumble down the table had begun. So, yeah, again, this is a decent point for them. Although, obviously, at home, you always hope to win. But, yeah, I think Reds, again, a little bit unlucky with the VAR and, yeah, maybe had the better chances overall. So a good point for Racel and, yeah, Urawa need to get going. But as we've said earlier, they host Hiroshima to kickstart match day 13, and that should be a terrific game on Friday night football. Okay, well, yeah, Tosu's recent dominance over FC Tokyo continued, Sam, on Sunday afternoon at Ajinomoto Stadium. What can I say? Again, in similar vein to, I guess, to Gumba, who hit the woodwork numerous times before finally breaking through against Kobe. Tokyo did it as well, firstly through Leandro in the 30th minute when his 25-yard free kick came back off the bar. And then in the 67th minute, the Tokyo substitute, Adailton, was sent racing away down the left by Kuryu Matsuki. His snapshot flew past Park Il-gyu, but clipped the post on its way out of play. So, yeah, Tokyo could consider themselves unlucky, but a very eventful day, to put it mildly, for the Tokyo keeper, Jakub Slovic, Sam. 2 minutes before the break, he tipped over Nanase Ino's point-blank header in spectacular fashion, one of his trademark spectacular saves. But then, it wasn't the best of second halves for Slovic, was it? And it all began in the 47th minute when Hotaka Nakamura played an innocent-looking ball back to the Polish keeper, and, it all went haywire from there.
Oh, yeah, it was just moments of madness, and it was glorious nonsense, is how I'd describe the next few minutes. Yeah, the pass back, they're just taking a leaf out of J2's book, because there was that incident a couple of weeks ago where there was a pass back, the goalkeeper rushes to get it off the line, does so with his hand, and then he's erroneously sent off, and they're going to have to replay the game. So this was a pop quiz for the referee, who passed that with flying colours. He didn't award a red card. He gave the indirect free kick on the 6-yard box, not on the goal line, which is where Ono, I think, wanted the free kick taken. But I don't really have to describe this. They try and dummy the free kick as many times as possible. And for the first couple of occasions, they induce an encroachment and get a yellow card after yellow card. And it just seemed like they were going to do this forever and just go on and go on. Eventually, Tokyo had a bit of restraint and stayed on the line. And then Tosa just ran up one by one by one by one. Eventually, it was a back heel and Ono shot, and it was blocked, as it was always going to be, because nobody followed Stuart Smith's great advice of just whacking that free kick at the players. It's going to hit somebody and possibly going, because you don't have they haven't closed down the distance. So, but they didn't do that. It was cleared away, but it was just a gloriously dreadful piece of football there. Yeah, it's done the rounds across the world, which is not always when you want the J League shown around the world for this sort of thing. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was just slapstick stuff, wasn't it? Yeah, so basically, I think it took 5 minutes from the time that Slovic basically poured the ball away from whether it was actually going to go in or not. I don't think we saw a definitive angle, but yeah, he'd obviously panicked and thought that it might have maybe gone in off the off his far post. He was able to pour it away, but then the referee awarded the indirect free kick. There were 8 Tosu players. They took at least 3 minutes having a conference. I'm surprised one of the trainers didn't come on with some biscuits and cups of tea for them as they were deciding how they were going to take it. They ultimately decided to do a Kyoto from a few seasons ago where they were all going to dummy it and, yeah, ultimately someone was going to give it a whack. But as you say, yes, yeah, Slovic and Keita Yamashita were booked for jumping off the line too soon. The first couple of times they attempted it, finally Yuji Ono fired into a gaggle of Tokyo bodies after Yuki Horigome tapped it back into his path. But yeah, the danger was averted, but well, not for too much longer. Well, about half an hour or so in the game. In between the time, of course, Adalton had hit the post, as I mentioned. But yes, in the 79th minute, Adalton leapt into Masayo Tashiro 20 yards from goal and, well, somewhat needlessly conceded a free kick. And from that, Yuki Horigome curled in a free kick with his left foot past a wrong-footed Slovic, Sam, who, yeah, I guess just capped off an eventful and not a particularly glowing second half for the Tokyo stopper, who has been obviously terrific since he arrived at the club. But, yeah, I don't know, he didn't trust his wall or, I don't know, he ended up making it fairly easy for Horigome to place his free kick, didn't he?
Yeah, that was it. He takes that couple of steps to his left-hand side and gambles on it. And, yeah, it goes where he was standing. It's just poor goalkeeping because if you should say as a goalkeeper, if they get it over the wall, up and under and down and score, fair play, they've done their job. But and the goalkeeper should deal with his side, and he doesn't do that. He gambles and then he's beaten. I think it's poor goalkeeping, which is, yeah, unlike what Slovic has been used to for the last few games. And even in the first half, he pulled out some good saves. But I thought, yeah, this was a poor piece of goalkeeping, very unlike him.
Yeah, and from there, well, yeah, it was no real response at all from Tokyo. And the game ended in, well, again, this isn't irrelevant to other supporters of other clubs, but yeah, Keigo Higashi had come off the bench, and the last act of the game was Higashi taking a corner kick. There were four Tosu players standing at the near post, and yeah, Higashi couldn't clear any of them, and the ball was the ball was headed away, and yeah, the referee blew up, and that was yet another victory for Tosu over Tokyo. I said last week they were a bogey team for the Capital Club. I hadn't actually realised at the time I mentioned that it was literally five straight wins coming into this game. But, yeah, I guess I just knew that they'd always beaten us. Again, I say us listeners as a Tokyo supporter in recent times. And, yeah, the curse, if you like, has continued. It doesn't matter who the manager is, it appears, of Tosu. They just have well and truly have the wood over FC Tokyo. And, indeed, they went above them in the table and up to fifth on 19 points. They're four unbeaten now, Sagan, and Tokyo lost for the second straight game right after we were obviously bigging them up on last week's podcast. They went down to Fukuoka last Wednesday night and were handed an absolute drubbing, although their defending was perhaps of an under 12 standard that, well, yeah, it was just frankly embarrassing at times. But, yeah, never won to shy away from sticking the boot in. Daniel Hawkins is back, of course, our soon-to-be Fukuoka correspondent. And Daniel asks, following being taught a lesson in the J-Talk derby and this loss on Sunday to Sagan Tosu, well, Daniel's definitely be doing his research. Tokyo haven't beaten a Kyushu-based team in all competitions since April last year. That was against Oita. How can they overcome the apparent curse of the South? Again, I appreciate that's quite tongue-in-cheek, Daniel, but I don't mind you getting the digs in about your team thumping mine last midweek. Well done and fair play on that win. Well, I can't explain the Tosu thing, Sam, apart from the fact that they're a bright side that go about things in generally the right way. And, you know, they've had luck along the way. I don't want to make excuses, but all six victories have not been clear cut and deserved necessarily, but Tosu have managed to do it. And, again, Tokyo couldn't beat Fukuoka in the league last season, or again in the first meeting this year. So, you know, fair dues. I don't know what the answer is. I'd love to know. I'd love to give Albert Puig a call and let him know, but I don't know. I think that the main reason this season is Tokyo are very much a work in progress and have players out, especially in the defence. I mean, you know, the five goals they conceded to Fukuoka, they conceded that many up to that point in the season. And Fukuoka had scored that many up until the point in the season last Wednesday when all hell broke loose at the Best Denki Stadium. So, yeah, I don't have an answer for Daniel, and I know he's not really expecting one. But, I think, Sunday was just another example, I think, of the fact, and Albert would know this, he's still got an awful lot of work to do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And then take into account the last couple of games, your defence has been completely ravaged. I mean, Morishige and Enrique Trevisan have been the main centre-back pairing. On Wednesday, Ryoya Ogawa, I mean, bless him, he played centre-back in position name only. I don't think he was actually there for most of it, but he was awful. And then this game, I think he was slightly better with Okazaki there. But still, it's not the greatest defence. Hotaka Nakamura, Okazaki, Kimoto, and then Ogawa. It doesn't breathe fear into many strike forces. So those are two caveats for this game. Although Tosu, yeah, they're always that team that just... And every team's just... It's a random thing in football that there are bogey teams. And for whatever reason, you just don't get to grips with Tosu. Whether it's psychological, whether it's just their style of play just really doesn't match with how Tokyo's set up. But I just think you've got to take that Avispa game with a pinch of salt. Great for Avispa to get a huge derby victory on that night. But yeah, you won't play an FC Tokyo as bad defensively again.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think I mentioned before that my desk at work is next to the PE teacher, who's also an FC Tokyo supporter. And he doesn't speak English at all. So we tend to communicate well in his Japanese and my broken Japanese. And I went into work on Friday after Golden Week last week, and we both basically we locked eyes and we just started laughing because it was just so ridiculous. And I said, I think I said, yeah, Ogawa. Centre-back Deki Nai Desne, and he just started laughing even louder than before. So basically I said, yeah, Ogawa is not can't play centre-back. And so we had a good chuckle over that, because I guess if you can't laugh, that's the end of it. So we move on, obviously hope for better things on Tosu against Tosu on Sunday, and suffered another defeat, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. And Horigome deserves credit for a terrific free kick, and the curse continues. So we've got a couple of games, three indeed, left to review, listeners. The next one is the other 1-0 result from match day 12, and that came up at the Sapporo Dome, where hosts Consadole edged their way past Kyoto Sanga with the only goal of the game coming 7 minutes into the second half, when Tomoki Takamine met Akito Fukumori's corner with a bullet header that flashed into the net low to Naoto Kami Fukumoto's left. A few chances here and there either side of Takamine's goal, Sam, but it didn't look like the festival of football some of us might have hoped between these two teams. And again, it appears if you can quieten Peter Utaka, then the Sanga attack is left sorely lacking these days.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And I think he had one chance where he got down the inside left, but really didn't have a too great opportunity to score. And it was an easy save for Sugano. And I just don't know what's happening to Sapporo, because this is five consecutive clean sheets for a Misha Petrovic Sapporo side, which is a disgrace. Shouldn't happen. That's not the Sapporo I know and love. And yeah, I mean, credit to them. They've took that 5-0 defeat to Tosu on the chin and have bounced back really well defensively, which still I can't really get over. But they're doing just about enough. They don't create too many chances. That lack of a real centre-forward is kind of harming them. I think Kaneko played up there nominally as the false nine in this game, and Gabriel Xavier has done it, because they don't seem to fancy Milan Tucic up there. And even though Nakashima has played well and he's even getting links to Europe already, but they don't fancy him either as a starter. So they are a little bit blunted going forward, a little bit like Nagoya. They are quite heavily reliant on set-piece delivery. And lucky you've got Akito Fukumori, who can put in a quality ball in. And yeah, it was pretty undefendable, the one he put in here. And Takamine met it with a very good header. And after that, they were pretty comfortable. And where's Misha Petrovic gone? Has anyone found him?
Yes, it's a real shock, isn't it? Yeah, that many clean sheets on the bounce for Misha Petrovic's side. It's pretty much unheard of. Maybe we should get Daniel H in the research department to check how long it's been since Petrovic's side's kept that many clean sheets in a row. But it's five unbeaten for Consadole now. And as I mentioned, there've been alternating results, and it's been wins and 0-0 draws. So coming up against Kashima away this coming Saturday. Well, I don't think many of us would be expecting that to end 0-0, but according to the recent pattern of Consadole results, that is likely to happen. So, you mentioned that chance for Utaka. That was in the 17th minute, Sam. At the end of a terrific one-touch move in midfield, but, he was unable to really trouble Takanori Sugino with his shot. And then, 10 minutes after they fell behind Sanga, Fuki Yamada fired over from the edge of the box. But that was pretty much it in terms of quality attacking chances for Sanga. And they've gone slightly off the boil, I suppose, Sam. It's now three without a win for them. Again, they've banked 16 points, which they would be very satisfied with, I imagine, after 12 games. So they're no need for any panic buttons to be pushed at the Kyocera Stadium at this point in time. But they'll be looking for a win to get themselves back on track this coming weekend. We'll wait and see there. All right, so two games left. The other 0-0 in the match day. Well, I mean, again, you wouldn't have expected this at kickoff. Fukuoka were fresh off a 5-1 battering at home of FC Tokyo and were home again when they hosted second from bottom Shonan. And they even had a full 45 minutes of this game, Sam, playing against 10 men after Yusuke Sagawa was shown a second yellow card and sent off 2 minutes into first half stoppage time. But despite some half chances, Fukuoka failed to make their numerical advantage count. And 10 man Shonan almost snatched a victory 5 minutes from time, but Wellington was unable to make contact with a superb cross in from the left from Daiki Sugioka.
Yeah, it's a good job he didn't grow a couple of inches, because that would have been shown on the head. And I thought Vispa were really poor in this game. They used up all their goals in midweek and used up any creativity that they had. Because, I think it was shown on before the red card that we'll get on to, they were arguably just about the better team and had really poor first half. And then in the second half, they just put a bank of fire and a bank of four in front of that and said, come on, Avispa, what have you got? Break us down. And they didn't have anything. It was very easy for Shonan to deal with. I think Tani may have had to make one or two saves, but really wasn't tested a great deal. And it was almost as comfortable as Shonan had been all season, and that's with 10 men. So, really disappointing from Avispa. You'd have thought tails would have been up after midweek and they'd have gone. But sometimes I guess against 10 men it is difficult when you just have them put 9 men behind the ball and just saying break us down. And the Vispa don't really have too much ingenuity to play those like kind of through passes. They've got decent crosses of the ball, but if Shonan allowed them to go wide and would deal with anything that was thrown in. And they didn't really have anything to change it up either, a Vispa. So that was go down as a really disappointing result for them. But I don't know if it's going to be the start of any sort of revival for Shonan. They just survived this one. But, they'll take the point and maybe they'll get some confidence out of it.
Well, after two straight defeats, obviously, going a man down just before the end of the first half, they their supporters, I'm sure, would have feared the worst heading into the sheds at halftime. But, maybe a character-building point, a point that can galvanise the team for bigger tests ahead. And they don't get much bigger than Yokohama F. Marinos visiting on this coming Saturday afternoon. But for Shonan, a couple of home games in a row now with that Kanagawa derby on Saturday. And then, as we mentioned earlier on in the episode, the following round, match day 14, they host Kobe in what is almost certain to be a battle of the bottom. Again, for Belmare, as they're certain to be the bottom two heading into match day 14. So yeah, disappointment for Fukuoka, well more frustration I suppose than anything else, as they failed to build on that huge victory over FC Tokyo. But another point for them, and they move on. All right, so the final game of the match day 12 slate that we will review is the first one that was played last Friday, and I've purposely kept it for last, Sam, because I know you've been pent up to talk about it basically since it ended last Friday night. So yeah, I've made you wait until the end of the episode. It ended, if you're interested listeners, at Cerezo Osaka 2 Jubilo Iwata 1, but there was some controversy, some sly underhand dealings from Cerezo Osaka in second half stoppage time that might have seen them bend the rules, not ever so slightly, but might have seen them bend it in half and snap it over their knees.
Yeah, very much so. This has kind of dominated my weekend, so I'm glad I get to talk about it here. I've just kind of set the scene. At this point, it was the 88th minute, I think. Cerezo Osaka have made all five substitutions, so they've got no more available. The ball is launched into the area. Kim comes and claims it. He collides with Otsutsu, lands very heavily on his shoulder, also possibly his head. So the first thing is, before I get into who's done right and wrong, I hope that Kim is okay. There are suggestions afterwards that he might have a concussion, and yeah, the shoulder injury obviously looked bad. So hopefully he gets better. But that doesn't excuse, I don't think, the failings and the everything that followed after this. So he is assessed on the field by the club physios. He's assessed for 2.5 minutes, which is not good enough to start with. And this is not a problem with Cerezo's doctors. This is just a problem with the way that football deals with concussions. If you look at the NFL, who I think are the best sport at doing this, any player that is suspected of concussion is taken off, is assessed for 10-15 minutes. And they have and in football's case, you'd have a temporary sub that would come on. That's what I think should have happened in this case, and we could have avoided everything else. But he was assessed for 2.5 minutes. He was deemed fine. He wasn't concussed. He was allowed to continue. Immediately, he takes a free kick and then holds his shoulder. He's quite clear, 100% clear, that it's the shoulder that is causing him the issue, and that the ball goes out of play and the physios come on again. They assess his shoulder and his shoulder only. They are not doing any of the concussion tests that they were doing previously. They just look at his shoulder. They determine that he can't continue with that, and then they make a substitute. They must have told the referee that they want to use the concussion substitute, even though all they've been assessing is the shoulder. So I think this is an erroneous use of that extra sub. I think they have worked the system, and I think they may have could have got away with it. If it was just his shoulder and the first time, you could have made it, okay, yeah, we're concerned about the concussion, we'll take him off at this point. They didn't do that, and it was quite clear at this point it was only the shoulder that was the problem, and they get an extra substitution. I think this is unfair. I think this Iwata should have been playing the final few moments against nine men. I think they've worked the system to their advantage and taken advantage of it. I feel for the referee, because if he's told by the physio that there is a concussion, he's in no position to change it or argue it. He has to go with what the doctors say. But I really don't like the way that this was done. I think it has been manipulated into a way that has used the concussion sub to get a sub basically for the shoulder injury. And that's not to say that he hasn't got a concussion afterwards. He may well have, but that goes back to he should have had a longer assessment and been taken out of the game earlier, because at the point when he's taken off, he is not complaining about potential concussion. So, yeah, I don't like the way this was done. I think Cerezo have kind of circumvented the rules here. Yeah, and it's really annoyed me. And I know that my view on this has annoyed a few Cerezo Osaka supporters. I can tell you, I have nothing against Cerezo Osaka. I don't care about what team this is. I just think the way that this was dealt with was very poor on their behalf. And I think the main issue is the way that concussions are dealt with in football as a whole. I think they're currently in this testing phase of these substitutions and whatnot. But if a team wants their player to play on, they are always going to, because the importance of the games, the money involved. And I think even at the first stage, they probably thought, all right, yeah, there might be something wrong with Kim, but we need him against Iwata have got an extra man and they're attacking and we probably need our best goalkeeper. And I think in certain circumstances, and I'm not saying this is definitely what's happened here, but teams will play their players through potential concussions just because otherwise they have to replace him for a worse player and have no prospect of getting him back on. So I think the whole system has to be looked at again. I think it needs temporary substitutions. I think it needs independent doctors that are not influenced by the team. And yeah, football really needs to book its ideas up, and clubs should not be taking advantage of the rule in the way that I am 100% convinced Cerezo Osaka did here. And yeah, that's the end of my rant. Ben, do you have anything to add?
No, that was an absolutely classic Robson's rant, Sam, and I think you've summarised it very, very well there. And yeah, most neutrals, I think, can't fail but to agree with you there, because it does appear that Cerezo have gamed the system. And again, we're not making light of any possible concussion that Kim might have suffered, and we're aware that this is a very serious issue in the game. And that's exactly, you can hear that in the passion in Sam's voice, that yeah, the way that players are assessed, and ultimately the decision as to whether players are deemed allowed to continue on or not is often very flimsily made. And this was just a perfect example. So unfortunate, but it looks like Cerezo are going to, in inverted commas, get away with it, as we've not heard anything official from the J-League on any rules being broken or protocols being circumvented as we record late on Monday night. So, I guess this is, well, it's not overshadowed, but it's put a slight tint on what was a 2-1 home victory, as I said earlier on. It was a game that saw Cerezo midfielder Seiya Maekuma score twice in the first half to give the hosts a 2-0 lead heading into the halftime break. But then, Sam's mentioned that they ended the game with 10 men, Cerezo. That is because with the 15 minutes left, Hirotaka Tamida was sent off. He had only been on the pitch for 10 minutes himself when he saw his yellow card for a foul on Daiki Ogawa changed to a red after a VAR review that we can have no complaints on. And I can finally play the VAR outro now, listeners.
This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week.
And then, Iwata's deficit was cut in half when Fabian Gonzalez's crisp first-time finish cut it back to 2-1 with 11 minutes to go. And then, the 88th minute is when it all happened for Kim. An unfortunate collision with Yuki Otsu. And, I guess now the rest is history. And, we're not holding our breath for any intervention from the J-League. But, it does appear that Cerezo have, as we say, gamed the system here. And just finally to echo your thoughts, Sam, that we all hope that Kim is okay to whether he's able to play this weekend or not, whether he has actually suffered a concussion or not, will probably come out sooner or later. But we hope he's fit and available to come back as soon as he is ready to do so. All right. So, did I go off on too many tangents there in response to you, Sam? Or are you happy with your rant, and we're happy to put that issue to bed now?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I've got it all off my chest. I'm calm. I'm absolutely fine. other than that, I thought it was a very good game. I thought Cerezo played very well, especially first half. I'm happy for Maekuma, who came in. He wanted to challenge for the right back role where he played at Nagasaki, but Matsuda has just carried on being very good at that position. So he's converted himself into more of a winger. And Jerry got his goals here. I thought they played very well. Kiyotake was controlling things. He was allowed into a more number 10 role rather than out on the left wing. And he benefited from that. I thought the way they sell both goals was very good. And then Iwata do as Iwata have done. Even though they were being outplayed for most of the game, they keep themselves in it. They keep themselves involved. I thought Gonzalez's finish was very nice into the bottom corner. And they were very much in the game. And it's just a shame that it kind of been spoiled a little bit by the end. But on the positives, I thought this was a very good game of football. And Cerezo Osaka, they're back. Because they had that terrible result, didn't they, against Kashima, but maybe they're just finding their feet again. And generally speaking, they look a decent side, don't they? I think they've played pretty well this season, and it was a good 3 points for them.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So we'll wait and see if there's any more Robson's rants in the weeks to come. And if this becomes a regular feature, don't worry, listeners, there will definitely be a drop for that on its way. But for now, we'll just wait and see. Obviously, as you all know, Sam is usually very mild mannered, but he'd been pent up and ready to deal on this particular issue since the last Friday night. So I'm happy that you're able to get all of that off your chest, mate. And with that is match day 12 in J1 rounded up. So yes, we've got match day 13 taking place this coming weekend. As we mentioned, it gets going with a huge game on Friday night when Urawa host Hiroshima at the Saitama Stadium. Reds looking to arrest their recent run of draws, and Hiroshima obviously looking to keep the good times rolling after their stunning win over the leaders this past Saturday. So the other 8 games are all on the Saturday, Sam. They're slightly spread out, beginning at 2 o'clock our time with the 3 games, and they finish with the late game at 7 o'clock at Hitachidai when Kashiwa host Gamba Osaka. So I guess with them spread out, you might want to pick one or two for Sam's pick of the weekend. But what are the fixtures in match day 13? I guess on the Saturday, we'll all be watching on Friday night, but of the ones on Saturday, which ones in particular have you got your eye on?
Yeah, well, I think it has to be Kobe versus Tosu, because I think they're just box office to watch anyway, Kobe, just to see what is going on with them. Not necessarily their football's box office, but the story around them is very interesting. And this Tosu, they're a very good side this season again, so it's not going to be easy for Kobe. So that one I really have my eye on. And then there are quite good fixtures around this match day. I'm going to pick out Kashima and Sapporo as well, then, if this is the new wonderful defensive Sapporo against a Kashima team off the back of a terrible result and they need to bounce back. Generally speaking, you would always expect Kashima versus Sapporo to have a lot of goals, and maybe that Kashima can find the old defensively inept Kastadoli Sapporo and we could have a really exciting end-to-end game. So yeah, those two, unfortunately, I think I've picked out two games that kick off at the same time, which isn't ideal, but that would be the ones I'd be after.
Yeah, fair enough. I tell you what, I'm slightly intrigued by Kyoto versus Shimizu. Obviously, Sanga on a slightly patchy run of form, but they have been impressive at times early this season, of course, and sit 10th, while the Shimizu, you keep expecting them to maybe lurch into some sort of form, Sam. So this could be the opportunity for them to do that and get a much needed victory under their belt when they visit the Sanga Stadium. But obviously whenever Peter Utaka is involved, we're obviously all on the hunt for fantasy points. But Sanga supporters are hoping that the great man can get his shooting boots back on and fire in a few more goals for Kyoto. So it promises to be an interesting match day up and down the country this coming weekend. And some fascinating games in prospect, no question. All right, then. So I think that's it for this week's episode, Sam. We'll thank, obviously, Daniel Hawkins for his questions from Patreon. I'm not sure if he's already ordered his Iniesta Fukuoka kit, but we'll wait and see, and we'll hear from him in that regard, I'm sure, soon. So looking forward to catching up with you again next week. Well, I don't know. I guess I secretly hope there's another reason for another Robson's rant on next week's episode, but we'll just have to wait and see how it goes.
Oh, I don't. It's a weird situation where you say things and people don't like hate you for it. I'm not usually used to that. So less arguments on Twitter for me this week. I'd like a nice calm match day. More of the Saga Tosu nonsense. That's what we want.
All right. Yeah, you better keep your head down on Twitter, Sam. That's usually pretty good advice, I think, for all of us. So, yes, indeed. All right. Well, looking forward to match day 13 and indeed next week's episode. So that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Daniel for his questions via Patreon. Indeed, all of our patrons for their ongoing support. If you'd like to get involved from as little as $1 a month, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. Listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are, and we'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 13. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.